everyone. I'm John Melke, and this is Parkside Today. I hope that you're all staying safe and healthy. Today, we'll be joined by three special guests. Jessica McPhail, Executive Director of the Racine Public Library. Barbara Bratton, Director of the Kenosha Public Library and Director of the Kenosha County Library System. And Anna Static, UW Parkside Library Director. We'll start by talking with Jessica McPhail. Jessica, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
I'm going to start out with maybe the assumption that sometimes the library can be something that gets taken for granted because you're always there. Always have been, right? And now,
yes.
Now during non-COVID times, well, the library isn't there, at least from a face-to-face standpoint. What reaction are you seeing from users of the library and possibly new users of the library?
Our library users miss us. They are emailing us. They are calling us. They are reserving books through us. They really miss us. And yesterday, we started our curbside pickup service.
Okay.
So people are calling in to reserve items and scheduling pickup times. And when they finally get to take their items from us, they are beaming with joy.
Wow.
One gentleman said to me today, "You don't know how much I've missed this."
Wow. Well, that's nice. That's great to hear. That's great to hear. Has it been a challenge to kind of keep up with some of the changes in the safer at home order, from safer at home to some businesses opening to some things that you can now do that you couldn't do, and how that's evolving?
It's been a whirlwind, and our staff, I have to give them just top marks. We've had so many changes that we've had to react to, and then another change that we've had to react to, and then yet another change, and they don't miss a beat.
Well, that's good. That's good. How is your staff, how do you work with the fact that materials are going out, they're coming in, you know, they need to be, I'm sure your staff needs to be careful or is being careful about, you know, how things are cleaned or handled. How do you deal with that, maybe in something that you hadn't had to deal with before in the same way?
You're absolutely right. This is all new. Anybody who's interacting with patrons or who is touching library materials has a mask, and I'll put mine on for your radio viewers, and gloves. So we are masked and gloved when we bring materials off the shelves, put them in bags, and hand them to the patrons after we've checked them out.
Great.
When library materials come in, they have to be quarantined for 72 hours before we
check them. Yeah, so that's kind of the time frame that they've indicated is sort of the length of time that the COVID virus could live on certain. I mean, they even say a little bit less on maybe some cardboard, but certainly is that what you're looking at as a good time frame for trying to make sure that the COVID virus doesn't continue to exist on the materials?
Yes, we're using the CDC guidelines, which say 72 hours is probably the maximum length. So to protect our staff and patrons, that's the time frame we're using.
Sure. And you kind of, Jessica, you touched on it a little bit at the beginning of our conversation about regular users and how much they miss the library. What are some of the ways that you're using to stay connected with your users?
Well, we have an email reference service, and that's been heavily used. Mm. People have forgotten their PIN number. That's their 4-digit code. They're emailing people who want to register for different programs that we have had in the past that are now online. Tomorrow night, Wednesday night, we have Reggie Jackson doing an online presentation. He's the board chair of the America's Black Holocaust Museum.
Wow.
He's doing a 3-part series on mass incarceration.
Okay.
And that'll be completely online. Tomorrow night is the first part at 6:00.
Okay, so I want to let our listeners know that we're recording this on April 28th, and you're giving us an April 29th event, and we will actually be broadcasting this more in the middle of May. So if someone hears that, they've got that reference. Talked a little bit there about the online. How has what the library is doing online, how has that changed in the last month?
Oh, it's changed completely. Those children who used to come in and see Miss Carey for the music programs, they're now watching her online.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I have a lot of fun imagining them at home with their brothers and sisters and parents all singing along to Miss Carey's songs.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just one of the programs. We also have Girls Who Code. We have other story times and other craft programs. One of our librarians is teaching Japanese online.
Oh, wow. And what, because you're moving from a physical space that was open to users of the library to something that where the physical space right now, at this point when we're talking, is not available. Hopefully that is soon. How are you reaching maybe some of your clients that, let's say that maybe a website isn't, the internet isn't available to them in their homes? Do you have a strategy for getting to those folks?
Those are the folks that call us using their phones.
Oh, okay.
And they're only on telephones. So we do the hard work here. We put the items on hold for them, and then we call them to schedule a pickup time, or they call us back.
Okay. Anything as we were getting closer to seeing that life was going to change pretty drastically because of COVID-19, how did the library begin preparing for what the past month and a half has been like?
We had about 2 hours notice that we were going to be closing. So.
Oh, a ton of time.
actually, we had an all-staff meeting on the Friday, May 13th, or March 13th.
Uh-huh.
By 1 o'clock, we learned that Racine Unified was going to be closing. So we knew we were going to be, 1 o'clock, we were told we could have no more programs.
Oh, wow.
And by 4, Racine Unified was closing, which meant the library was closing too.
Wow. Wow.
So it was a lot of planning in a very short amount of time. We decided to stay open on Saturday.
Oh, okay.
Last day that we were open, we did gangbusters business.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
People just loaded up on books, and we have a ton of games available, board games and family games, and those went like crazy.
Wow. What things have you and your staff learned, kind of like looking at how do you make the best of a bad situation, but what have you learned during the past month and a half about your operations and things that you may put more into play when hopefully life returns to a little bit more of a normal state?
We know how much patrons rely on us for their social interaction. A lot of our folks, we're their social life. They come in and talk to us every day or every other day. We're one of the weekly stops, and we know these folks very well.
Sure.
We know they're the ones that miss us the most. That's been tough. We miss them too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you also talked a little bit about some of the younger kids. How have you seen more? Maybe more younger people utilizing the library than in the past because of the fact that they're kind of now safer at home?
In some ways we do. We see a lot of family materials. The parents will call and say, we want picture books, we want young adult books, we want adult books, and we want DVDs for the whole family. I'm not sure I would say one age group more than others has come forward as needing us more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it certainly that must be a very interesting and challenging time from your position as a director and being able to adjust on the fly very quickly.
I have a terrific staff. They have changed and changed and changed again, and we've just decided we're good at this.
That's good.
We'll deal with it.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. Well. Jessica, thank you very much. We've been talking with Jessica McPhail, who is director of the Racine Public Library. And Jessica, we appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much. Wash your hands.
Oh, I've been washing my hands. I've never taken my temperature more in my entire life than I've taken my temperature in the last month. So hopefully we're doing the right things.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Next, we'll be joined by Barbara Bratton, director of the Kenosha Public Library and director of the Kenosha County Library System. Barbara, thanks for being with us on Parkside today.
Thanks for having me.
I'll start out with a question that I asked Jessica McPhail from Racine. you know, it seems like the library sometimes, because you guys are always there, always have been there, that that it's easy to maybe take the library a little bit for granted. And now with the COVID times, that certainly changes. What has been some of the reaction from your let's say more regular users to the library, and also what have you seen from new library users?
I think it's there are two things I can think of right off the top of my head. Two really meaningful interactions we've had is the mothers of young children who have thanked us profusely for putting our story times online.
Oh, okay.
It isn't that you can't get story times, all kinds of different story times from all kinds of celebrities, but to see the staff online is such a sense of normalcy for their children. I thought that was really significant. I hadn't thought about that before, but it's the relationship, I think, that really is what's missing in people's lives, is the relationship with the library, whether, you know, it's the staff or the physical space or the routine. I have some elderly patrons who say, I walk over to Southwest every day and I read the newspaper, and that is my routine.
Yeah.
And I just feel so disconnected. My world is just so mixed up because I don't have that ability to do that anymore.
Right.
So it's a lot of, we miss you, we miss you. And I think a lot of that is that personal relationship with the staff that they miss.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that one of my friends at Parkside, John Velasky, makes use of the library like constantly. At least he claims he uses the library constantly. And John does not, he does not have email. He does not have internet in his home, as far as I know. Maybe he's changed that in the last month, but that certainly makes it more challenging for people that don't have that resource. I want to get back to another question, but kind of heading down that road a little bit. How are you adapting or helping people that may not have internet access in their homes?
Well, we have hotspots and laptops, and we have given out everything that we have in that way. But we have started curbside pickup now, too. So we get that message out in every analog way that we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And people, word of mouth is really important and really effective. And so we've had 3,000 people respond so far, and they can call us with their requests. It's been an extraordinary amount of work, but at the same time, it's that relationship again. Mm-hmm. So that if you're not online and you would like some books or some other materials, you can call us.
Mm-hmm.
And we have 6 people on the phone at once handling these calls.
Oh, wow.
You can say, I really like this particular book, or I really like this film, or I listened to this. Is there anything similar that you can provide to me? Or we offer a bag of 10. So what you can do is just say, I really love historical fiction set in the Civil War period.
Oh, okay.
I had that request yesterday.
Give
me 10 books. And so I put 10 books together for that person in a bag. And so it's kind of a surprise bag. And that's really nice for parents who might say, I have a 3-year-old who really loves trucks, and I have an 8-year-old who's very interested in gardening, or I have, I love this particular series of children's books for my 12-year-old. Can you put together a bag of 10 for each one of those kids? And we do that. So that's really adds a kind of element of fun to it.
Sure.
Surprise. And a lot of people are going to discover authors that they've never tried before. So hopefully that'll help.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's a great idea that they, like you say, they may get exposed to an author that they may not have thought about reading before. That's really interesting. How are you? And I know that we're recording here on April 28th, and the show will air on WIPZ sometime in mid May. Before that, we do post the show on podcasts. We're on Spotify and others. So that's a place where people can go and listen. With materials coming and going, Barbara, from the library, how does the staff deal with keeping things clean, I guess is the best way I could put that?
Well, that's a really excellent question and something that we have held off bringing materials back for that very reason. So the CDC has given us a lot of advice about this through the Institute of Museum and Library Services. So they have made a study on exactly how long this virus lasts on different surfaces.
Okay.
And paper, 24 hours, not a problem.
Okay.
But, you know, the harder surfaces, like maybe the cover of a DVD or even a laminated book.
Right.
And so, you know, taking a look at that to be absolutely safe, we're looking at a 72-hour quarantine period.
Sure.
So we have, we figured out that we have an automated return system. I don't know how many people know that, but we did this probably 4 years ago. We put in automated return systems at Northside and Southwest System. And what is, you can drive through that that book drop drive-through at Southwest, put your materials through the slot, and a machine takes it to along a conveyor belt and automatically checks it in and sorts it out the way that we ask it to sort.
Wow.
So, so anything that's going to Racine Library or any of the other libraries in our share consortium outside of the Kenosha Public Library or even out to Community Library goes in different bins. And then we never touch it. You know, we just slap the top of the bin on it and we set it out for delivery and that's the end of it.
Wow.
Anything that's internal, we'll just be able to move to our garages and keep them quarantined for 3 days before we touch it. And then the antivirus that's remaining is so weakened that it can't hurt anybody.
Oh,
so that's the advice we have, and that's how we're going to follow it. We're going to start taking returns on Friday, May 1st. So by the time that this is aired, we'll have already started that.
Right. Yeah. How did the library have to change and adjust once it became clear that a safer at home executive order was coming? And I know that happened pretty quickly. What was it like for your staff to kind of adjust to that?
Yeah, our biggest concern, of course, is all the different programs that we do in person.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest of those is our summer reading program. Obviously, that's been going on for as long as libraries have been open.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very important, especially this year, because kids didn't get to finish the school year.
Right.
And the whole point is that if you continue to read during the summer, you won't lose your skills.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How to get that online. And we're very, very concerned about equity. So, you know, if we make it a drive up kind of thing, what about the people who can't drive up?
Right.
How do we get it into the hands of every kid in the city?
Sure.
You know, we're really involved in the parks project too, where we have the summer camps and we don't know whether we'll be able to hold those.
Hmm.
So that was always a great avenue for getting a summer reading program into the central city parks, where a lot of the kids don't come regularly to the library, but they had exposure through those parks programs. You know, so much is up in the air. The hardest thing for us is not knowing when and how we can bring services back online.
Sure.
And,
great.
You know, I think we're all in that together as a society. You know, we've been warned that there'll be an ebb and flow to this virus.
Yeah.
So even if we go back online or open up our doors and everything seems normal, well, we may have to go through this cycle all over again.
Right.
So it's that uncertainty. I'm trying to get things online as much as we can, but also recognizing that not everybody is online, and how do we make our services as equitable as possible?
Sure. What about in your role as library director in the city of Kenosha, and then also for the Kenosha County Library System, how are there different challenges for each one?
Well, the city is the one that just consumes me because it's a very big job to manage 4 branches and 100 people.
Yeah.
The county library system is another entity that is funded by the county and the state together.
Okay.
And that provides equitable technology for all the libraries in the county. So we share a lot of the internet and all those kinds of things are all regulated through that system.
Mm-hmm.
DPI, the Department of Public Instruction, also provides money through systems to support libraries in different ways. And one of the things that we're going to start, and this is fantastic because we have this money that's coming through the CARES program mm-hmm. to libraries specifically for equitable service. And what we're going to do is add a hotspot, but just not your typical hotspot, something that has a really high frequency and can go at a far distance, at least 100 feet. And we're going to put it in our new outreach van and drive it into neighborhoods where we know that people can't afford internet service and have maybe small data plans on their phones that limit them. So we'll be able to have a mobile hotspot unit kind of out there and also into the rural areas where in the county where they all also experiencing that. You know, that same limitation. We're going to also put a hotspot into one of the public buildings in Salem Lakes in an area where we know where the elementary school was in Silver Lake.
Okay. Okay.
That area right there that doesn't have a lot of internet access. And so we can drive out, you know, a couple hours every week and get people online that way. So there's a lot of programs that run through the state from the federal government and then are dispersed through the system.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, all your ebooks come through the money for all your ebooks come through that channel and are dispersed out to the community library and the Kenosha Public Library through the system. So it's an interesting arrangement.
And it sounds like an interesting arrangement and an interesting challenge. As you're talking about that, I'm thinking certainly the library isn't just about making sure that the book gets back on the right shelf in today's world. Far from it.
No, but inventory control is a very large part of what we do. I'm so glad we automated a few years back. That's really made it more manageable. When you figure that we're moving at least 1 million things around every year, and you know how many times do you have to touch something to check it out, bring it back in, get it on the shelf? That's a lot of movement of materials.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking with Barbara Bratton, who's director of the Kenosha Public Library and director of the Kenosha County Library System. Barbara, thanks very much for taking time on Parkside today.
Thank you, John.
Next, we're going to be talking with Anna Stodick, who is director of the library at UW Parkside. Anna, welcome to Parkside Today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I asked each of your colleagues, Jessica McPhail with Racine and Barbara Bratton with Kenosha, how during the COVID times, what they've seen in terms of how has the library changed? How has the user interface with the library changed in the past month and a half?
It has, of course, changed. Our in-person traffic has stopped due to the closure of the campus, not only the library, but we found a lot of traffic using our online resources. And that's something that our students are used to and our faculty are used to, and they're getting better and better at using it. One of the changes I would say is there are more reference questions or research questions from faculty than there have been before. In person, we get more from students. Now, I looked at a report about a week ago. We had, I think, 150% increase in faculty inquiries to librarians, and that's generally, can I get this online resource? How does this online resource work? Can you do instruction for my class? That kind of thing.
Interesting, interesting.
So it's the shift to online.
Right. How have you and your staff, I mean, the Safer at Home executive order, you know, happens pretty quickly. So it's not like, I'm assuming it's not like you had a whole lot of time to prepare, that you had to adjust kind of on the fly, correct?
We did, but at the risk of bragging over public radio, we were born for this moment. We have been working on this idea for a couple of years now. The idea that we could access all of our tasks from a distance, like remotely, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And people really have been trying to make that mental shift. I think there's a number of positions in the library that make that easier. One of those being our instructional design librarian, who is Shauna Edson, has really been working and giving us workshops and things like that for the last couple of years on how to work with Blackboard, Collaborate, and Canvas. Mm-hmm. Online learning systems. Okay. And then we have meetings in Blackboard Collaborate, even when we were on campus, just to learn how to use it, how to provide resources and things. So we've been learning this for a couple of years. It would have been impossible without that preparation beforehand.
Wow, interesting.
We can't say we were thinking a global pandemic was coming and this is what we're going to do. But just the way the world was trending, we've been thinking about this for a while.
For the Big Read, it seems like each year the Big Read books were some sort of global pandemic. Wasn't that the case? Did that help you at all or not?
That's so true. We had Emily St. John Mandel here 2 years ago in 2018 for Station 11, which was, it's so much like this global pandemic, except her Georgia flu is much more deadly. But yeah. She was scheduled to speak for a Big Read in Menominee Falls at the public library, I want to say March 12th, right in that area.
Oh my gosh.
Just as it approached, she had to cancel because of a global pandemic, which was amazing. I watched it happen and couldn't believe it.
Wow. How, and now we mentioned just before we started chatting here that both Racine and Kenosha are doing some curbside service for people who want to use resources from the library. Is that correct to say that is not taking place at Parkside currently?
Well, we had our first curbside delivery, I would say, 2 hours ago.
Oh, okay.
So we decided we would start it up. After May 4th, we need to have some librarians in the library because we're preparing for our big construction project starting on June 1st.
Right.
And faculty and students have asked about curbside. So we thought as soon as the governor's orders allowed it and we had a decent workflow and someone to do it, we would make that happen. Because there's no reason it can't, really. It's not that difficult of a procedure.
Sure. And just reminding our listeners that we're recording this actually on April 28th. And our broadcast date is right now in mid-May. So if we talk about something in the past, you'll understand why. When it comes to keeping the library clean, keeping resources clean during this, what does that initiative look like for you and your staff?
So for something like curbside delivery, we've been paying a lot of attention to what the CDC has recommended, particularly through a webinar that a lot of us attended. Exactly about how long does the virus survive on cardboard, on paper, on library books, and what are the recommended procedures.
Mm-hmm.
So amazingly, they believe that after 24 hours on paper or cardboard, the virus, even if there's actual virus on it, it's essentially, how would I say it? It wouldn't be effective anymore. It wouldn't be live. It wouldn't be active. You couldn't get it.
Yeah.
On plastic, it would be a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
Our plan is just to intake books. So we have people dropping them off in a couple of places, student life, the police station for now,
mm-hmm.
Things like that. As soon as campus would open up, we'd have our drop box. So we just try to leave those for 3 days, essentially.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Handle them with gloves, make sure we wash our hands, that kind of thing.
Sure. You and I talked a little while ago about, you used the term in our discussion, the digital divide, and how this pandemic and this challenge for our society is is, I think the word you used was exacerbating the digital divide. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, the digital divide really is the question of, if you don't have access to a computer and then to the internet, you're at a disadvantage. That sounds really obvious, but situations like this make it worse, especially where most of our library resources, really more of them, are available online than are in print. Mm-hmm. And of course, online learning, all the classes, Canvas, that kind of thing. If you wouldn't have a laptop, you wouldn't have the internet, it would be a problem. Thinking about this about a year ago, we decided to experiment with what a lot of public libraries are doing, and that is checking out hotspots. So starting in fall, we bought 5 hotspots in the library, have them on contract, tested them all over the 2 counties, also in the most rural areas in the counties, just to be sure that whatever students we have get a hotspot, it would work in their homes. And we had a few students check them out here and there, but of course, when this happened, we checked all those out right away, and the university, mm-hmm. bought a number of laptops and a number of hotspots, and have been giving those to students so that nobody's left behind. Mm-hmm. That's a really important initiative.
Can you, for someone kind of like myself, who's not all that up on hotspots, what does that mean? What are those?
Oh, a hotspot.
Yeah.
It's internet access that you can just plug in and have access. Normally in a home, you would have to have a contract with someone, an internet service provider, AT&T, Spectrum, or any of those that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And for this, you don't. We've paid for it already, and you would just take it home and plug it in. It's not like anything has to be set up. As soon as it's plugged in, it's a live internet connection.
Oh, okay. And is it cellular based? Is that where it's
yes.
getting the connection through cellular? Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I know that was one of the things that that Barbara Bratton from Kenosha mentioned, that they were, I don't know if they are doing it or they're planning to do it, the like a mobile hotspot where they would be able to take a vehicle, drive into a certain area of a city or out in the county or someplace where maybe someone did not have, or people that did not have internet connections. And there was a mobile hotspot that was, she claimed, about 100 feet, a radius of about 100 feet, where people would be able to then use that service. I thought that was an amazing idea. And then you had said before we started chatting, it's the bookmobile, only the hotspot bookmobile.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I know some public libraries and other businesses and things have left public Wi-Fi on so that people could drive up to their parking lots, park in the parking lot, and use internet from there, pull out your laptop and do whatever you need to do.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. What do you think has been the biggest challenge for your staff during this time, the last month and a half or so that the Safer at Home order has been in place?
I think it's probably responding to so many different things. I'm not sure there's one big challenge, but things will happen, like different vendors or university presses will offer free resources, and you could get lists of hundreds of these. So to sift through them and say which of these are appropriate for our students, mm-hmm. Which does it make sense to actually go through the effort of connecting it into our system and that kind of thing, and making it, you know, usable? Do we have a long enough time period that it's free to be able to use it? All that kind of thing. You don't want to throw it all out there. It's a forest for the trees sort of issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then monitoring it, because once the free subscription is over, you want to be able to say, do we keep going or don't we? And what would that cost? And all those questions.
Sure.
So something like that. Then there are a lot of questions about online instruction and how to get resources into instruction. There's a lot of planning involved too. You know, you have questions like, coming up in summer, what will classes need? And while we usually have time to prepare for that, I think faculty are really stressed by the quick change online,
mm-hmm.
and they might not have time to think about that as far in advance as they would normally.
Yeah.
And so, you know, making those arrangements so that everything works. I would say things like that are the most challenging. Occasionally you have stressed out students, anxious students.
Yeah.
But I have to say, it's much less than I thought there would be. We probably only got 2 or 3 students calling up and just worried about different aspects of their experience. And we were able to get them to resources. I feel like we have a great network.
sure.
on campus of people who can help them.
Yeah, it was one of the things that I forget who I had the conversation with maybe a week or so ago, and talking about the, you know, the stress level, whether it be for faculty, for staff, for students, and the person I was talking to said, you know, keep in mind that I know who I was talking to. I was talking to my dad, and sometimes my dad can be a little bit more of, well, come on, let's just do this. And I said, you know, Dad, that this, here's what's going on. He goes, you know, John, you got to remember that it's not just what their job might be or their studies might be. It's the how does all of this COVID anxiety then come into play and add to that? And I said, well, thanks, Dad. I appreciate that that perspective. But it is just more than one or two things, isn't it?
I think that's true. I think in the best case scenario, online learning and then our work online as librarians and probably everyone else at the university is something that we can do to help, and that also helps sort of ease that anxiety. I think it would be worse if we didn't have that kind of activity to look at and to work with.
Sure.
Also, it helps to see student success stories. Every now and then we'll get, you know, just some comment from a student or someone else like, hey, this worked. I'm so excited. And that just sort of keeps you going. And that's a good thing too.
Yeah. So, Anna, what has this experience taught your staff? What have they gained from it?
I think it's taught us to be nimble. It's taught us to work as a team online even better. One change I've seen is that when we bring something up for discussion, everyone is quick to reply. They're really open about what they're saying. They're not shy about throwing an opinion out there. I think because the situation is evolving so quickly, they realize they need to get things done, or we need to get things done.
Right.
One example would be the other day, a faculty member asked for a new resource. It was a trial resource, meaning that the vendor was offering it free for a certain amount of time. Okay. And they wanted to use it as soon as possible for a class. So normally the faculty member would ask the library liaison, that is the librarian who is responsible for that department. She knows the faculty, she knows the resource. But the faculty member asked me, and so I put it out to the group, and the group just started throwing opinions out there. This is a great resource, we should try it. Will it work with our system? How do we do it technically? There are a lot of questions about this. I mean, just to get it done. And normally this decision might take several days. We might wait for a meeting, do it in a week, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
For this one, she asked at 10 o'clock, and one librarian offered to talk to the vendor to get the technical stuff. Another one embedded it, did everything really quickly. By 1 o'clock, we had that resource up and ready for the faculty member and all the students to use. And I was just really proud of how that worked like clockwork. And it wouldn't have if we wouldn't have learned to just talk about it, just throw it out there. How's it going to work? How are we going to do it? Let's get this thing done.
Right.
So that sense of nimbleness, I think, is one of the things we've learned.
Mm-hmm.
There are practical questions, too. Do we have enough hotspots and laptops for normal operations? We do for this kind of pandemic. The university did have to purchase more to lend to students.
Right.
How do we do curbside? Those kind of questions. So we're learning day by day as it evolves.
Yeah, certainly that lending of the hotspots and lending of computers to students, you know, helped many of them once this went to online. And, you know, and hopefully this is something that that we don't have to live through too much longer. We can hope that that we move to a different place rather quickly.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully how long we have to stay kind of in this COVID mode doesn't stick around too long. Anna, I appreciate your time today. We've been talking with Anna Stodic, the director of the UW Parkside Library. But wait, because we're recording this using WebEx, Anna can say, no, I'm not done yet. And that's okay. That's the beautiful part of doing the WebEx thing here with the video.
I had one thing I thought I really should tell you about. Sure. And it is that our archives is collecting people's stories about the COVID-19 time.
Wow.
So you can go to uwp.edu/COVID-19 archives, just like that, COVID-19 archives.
Yeah.
And tell your story either by writing, you know, you know, writing in a little document what's going on in your life, showing us a picture of your work at home as a student, staff, faculty member, recording a little video and uploading it, anything like that. We would appreciate that. We're getting some good photos and some good documentation of the time. And we'd like to do a community-facing part of this, too. We're working on that.
Yeah.
Just to record people's lives, because in some time, it will be great to look back at this and say, hey, what were our modifications?
Yeah. That's for sure. Like people have said, you know, times unlike any other that most of us have seen. And at some point, someone will look back and wonder what that was like. Anna Stodic, director of the UW Parkside Library, thank you very much. We also, on this episode, chatted with Jessica McPhail, executive director of the Racine Public Library, and Barbara Bratton, director of the Kenosha Public Library and director of the Kenosha County Library System. To hear past editions of Parkside Today, visit uwp.edu/Parkside Today. Thanks for listening, everyone.